All right.
3, 2, 1.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gunling and J.J. Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gunling and J.J. Devaney. What's up, brother?
I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, I'm well. The season is over. It's weird to now be doing a post-Premier League podcast. Now, the season isn't fully over because there's still an FA Cup. There's still, just a little European final.
But it is.
Which will never stop being hilarious and awesome all at once.
Yeah, that is. And thank you to everyone who listened to our Champions League podcast from last week and enjoyed our joy. Twitter is such a... Well, social media in general is such a negative space. Mm-hmm. But the amount of people who I love when a guy from Iowa starts an email. I'm a diehard West Ham fan, but I'm happy for you guys. Like, I love that. Like,
I saw even an Arsenal fan wrote in and said that he at first went into it with like a bad attitude, but our joy was infectious,
which is unbelievable. Yeah, and ultimately, like, as much as we enjoy like breaking down the game and you know, analyzing stuff and doing all that, it is nice to be able to show joy and not get like killed for it,
right?
To enjoy something and not be told you're a bandwagon or you're just...
Can I tell you what I did last night? So the Sixers played last night, and for anybody who's listened to this podcast for any length of time, you know I'm a massive, insane Philadelphia sports fan. So that was... It's one of the worst losses I've ever experienced as a fan.
We're going to get to
and
that.
And it was certainly the worst basketball loss I've ever experienced for the Sixers. It was horrifying. Mm. So the game ended, and I just sat there. I turned off the TV because I wanted no part of anything. I was going to watch Game of Thrones, but I was like, I'm not in the mood for anything. And sometimes, after a bad loss, you almost want to punish yourself. So I just turned off the TV, and I sat there and stared. And finally, when I kind of came out of this like haze,
stupor,
and I was in such a horrible mood, and I just like Amanda went up to bed, and I just continued to sit there, and I didn't even know what to even do now. You know what I did to try to brighten my spirits? I went on YouTube, and I just watched one Tottenham video after another after another. I must have seen every person who posted a reaction video to them reacting to the Lucas Moura winning goal. Right. I've seen it. I've seen all your videos, every one of you out there. I watched the highlights over and over. I went on Tottenham's Twitter feed and just watched their content. I watched all of it to try to like get myself out of this headspace that I was in. And you know what? It worked.
Now, yesterday, I didn't feel like that. I felt kind of just flat, a little bit disappointed. But I can see why you do. I have done that kind of thing before where you just throw yourself into a joyous moment and get lost in it.
Sometimes I'll just put on a Seinfeld or a Family Guy or just something that I can just like take my mind elsewhere.
Sopranos is my one.
Anchorman, I used to be a big one for me. Let's talk, though, about what happened on Sunday, because that is really the big story. Manchester City, champions again, fourth in 8 seasons. They right now are... really in the midst of a run of dominance where I think you'd have to, like, you know, Sir Alex had his run with United, then a brief kind of reign with Wenger, although not like this, and then kind of into Mourinho with Chelsea. I think now we're in a Manchester City world now in the Premier League.
That, I mean, the way you phrased that is just shocking.
100% accurate and factual.
And quite scary. Really, really quite scary because... You don't see anything derailing City right now except some kind of governance issue like what came down today and was reported in the New York Times where they may
look
be...
Look at you. We're in the first minutes of this
podcast because you look
and you're
at
going right into financial fair play.
No, because you...
Yeah, get him. Come on. I love the bitterness. Get him.
No, it's genuinely not bitterness. You've drove me down this road.
We're talking
about dominance. I thought we were
going to... I'm saying we're in their era. We're in their world now.
Far and away, they've back-to-back titles... Far and away the best team. I wouldn't say far and away. The best team in England, obviously proven.
Not far and away. We'll talk about that.
But yeah, another triumph that they deserve. You see, you've put me in a zone I didn't want to be with. I didn't want to go.
What's the matter with you?
I didn't want to go to this straight away, but I'm going to go to this straight away because there's, you know, obviously on this podcast, we talk about as much football as we possibly can, but we often talk from the perspective of being fans. So I'm always like overly conscious that people in this era just want to call you a homer and want to slag you off for that. So I found someone who wrote something that sums up what I think about this Manchester City team, and that is as magnanimous as I'll get. It's by Barney Roney. The city supremacy, you love that, you like that, you pretty much
why
said
do I
that.
Love that?
Because that's pretty much how you opened.
Well, because I speak truth to power.
Oh,
that is the world's worst phrase.
It's terrible. I get chills every time I hear it. He just speaks truth to power, and I respect that. The city supremacy has not been an organic process. The billions spent are significant. The Premier League has now been won twice in a row by a sublime team that acts as an advertising billboard for the state of Abu Dhabi. Yet, this stands separate from the achievement of the players and staff. It is the paradox of City. The only real world star in the setup is the manager. City haven't gone out and bought a bolt-on team of proven Ballon d'Or-level goal psychopaths. They didn't go for Ronaldo or Messi, but invested in fine young players, almost all of whom have been pushed to the outer levels of their talent. That is how I feel. That is the best accommodation I can come to with a team in City that for most of my life were a laughingstock, a yo-yo club. Now, I'm quite comfortable to say Pep Guardiola is an excellent manager. And you look at all the work, all those videos we saw of him working with Raheem Sterling, you know, painting lines on the training ground to get him to go wide. Look at all that stuff, the patterns of play I saw in New York and Orangeburg at preseason. All that work, all those young players come together under an excellent coach and deservedly are champions.
Yep. And, you know, I like what Barney Roney wrote there, because it does speak a little bit to, you know, the contributions that they've received on so many different levels from so many different players. Like, if you looked at this team before the season and you know, you were told they were going to go on this run to put up, what was it, 98 points that they finished with this year? You know, Gabriel Jesus was kind of a bit part. Kevin De Bruyne was injured for two stretches of the season for multiple weeks on end. Fernandinho, who we were told multiple times throughout the season might be their most important player,
can't win without him,
he missed time with injury. Benjamin Mendy, for the second straight year, there's people who probably forget he's even on their team. You know, so like Pep, you know, like you said, he took Raheem Sterling and turned him into arguably the best player in the league. You know, he took Bernardo Silva, who a year ago was, for however good Bernardo Silva was in his first year with Manchester City, he was basically a super sub. That was pretty much his role.
What did Pep say, though, in the midst of that? He will be here for season on season on season.
He loves him.
He'll be here as long as I'm here, he said.
Right. So. But he's taken Bernardo Silva and made him one of the best players in the league. You know, David Silva, at times this season, you were starting to see his age. They still found a way to use him in a productive way. By the way, they did this. They went on this romp through the league. They won their last 14 games. And like, what was Leroy Sané to that? Like, these are all these names that I'm saying right now.
He didn't come on yesterday.
Didn't even come on. Now, these are all these names that I'm saying. Jesus, Sané. You know, these are all players that if you told me they were going to go on this crazy run through the league like they did, I would think these guys would have been huge parts. But Pep found ways to get everyone to just play their role. No one guy really needed to stand out from the rest by all that much.
And look,
with the exception maybe of Sterling, who did have an extraordinary year.
Yeah, and look, Pep doesn't write the checks. You know, the money is being supplied from somewhere else. And I can't guarantee you that if they didn't get a lesser standard of player, that he couldn't coach the hell out of those guys. I do believe he is that good. But it's a measure of City strength and depth that you can take on someone like Riyad Mahrez and not play him in a league game since the first week in April. And he pops up with a wonderful goal, which really separated the sides. It put the tin hat on the result yesterday. As far as final days go, for a little while, for a brief moment, Andrew, I thought it was set up for one of those days where
they gave you that
little
brief hope.
Well, when Liverpool went 1-0 up, I was like, yes. But it was fairly sustained Liverpool pressure. And I really had to turn to my iPad and see what was happening at City. And despite what the Wolves fans were trying to trick Anfield into thinking, there was no goal until a little bit after that. And when Glenn Murray nodded home or whatever happened there.
Yeah, it was.
By the way, you watch two games at once, you don't watch any game. I'm convinced of that.
Well, he did. It was on a corner kick. He headed it right in. It was very well done.
So that moment, I got up, punch my pump my fist. Come on, here we go. But this is City, and it was really no surprise that Aguero put cold water on that really, really quickly with his equaliser. And then by halftime, they were ahead.
The Vincent Kompany goal against Leicester on Monday, that will probably be the defining moment of the season for Manchester City, just because of like the moment, the man who did it, you know, what it meant. However, I would say the Aguero immediate response against Brighton might actually be like the bigger moment, just because if he doesn't do that as quickly, like with true immediacy to Brighton's goal, who knows how that could spiral in any way as the pressure builds. Now, I think Manchester City is above that. We saw that a little bit in the second leg against Tottenham in the Champions League, even though they didn't go through. I mean, the way that City responded to the pressure was admirable. But you don't know. And we saw the way Brighton were able to defend against Arsenal. But that response from Aguero and how quickly it happened, to me, it shut the door. Now, I know even at a draw, if it had remained 1-1, Liverpool still would have been the winners. But you just felt like when that Glenn Murray or the Aguero response to the Murray goal happened, I thought that was it for me.
Well, for me, I agree with everything you're saying there, but I believe the longer that goes on at 1-0, say they got to halftime and it was 1-0, that is causes serious tension, serious nerves going into the break. It was a wonderful little piece of play from, I think, David Silva to play him in, and a great finish. The fact that they got back to parity so quickly, Andrew, was huge.
Yeah.
You cannot... It was interesting in Miguel Delaney's piece, and he was there. He said it was genuinely tense. For that period of time, it was genuinely tense. And if you watch the sideline, I don't care how good a coach Pep Guardiola is, his demeanour, to me...
I thought the same thing.
Never sends calmness, tranquilo, none of that. He is wired.
He took off his jacket, he threw it.
Well, it was good that he got up and was pacing the sideline in one sense, because it meant that Mikel Arteta's ear got a break. Like, he just talks at him. You know, you pan and he's complaining in Arteta's ear and Arteta's just nodding. And then he gets up, he whips his jacket off, prowling the sideline. He's a great coach, but he would not inspire calmness in me.
Pep said this about the title. To win the title, we had to win 14 games in a row. This was the toughest title in all my career by far. I don't think that that is hyperbole. I really don't. I think Liverpool...
It's the closest. He's always kind of been a front runner in titles and stayed ahead.
But it's not just that it was close. I mean, Liverpool forced City to find something within themselves. They had to win... If they didn't win 14 games to end the season, they don't win a title.
Right,
that's an incredible thing to ask of a team.
But identify within those 14 games. By the way, they'd already lost 4 games.
Right.
Yeah, the wobble was over. So when Liverpool... Actually, we'll get to where Liverpool went wrong. But identify for me in the 14 games where it was in doubt. Maybe a bit against Leicester on Monday night. Still a 1-0 win. Maybe a bit against Burnley away. There was far more, how shall we say, nervy moments on the Liverpool side. There was the Palace game, and there was the Newcastle away, or the Southampton away game and Newcastle away, where Liverpool nearly blew it.
But the fact of the matter is, Liverpool continued to play first and continued, whether it was close or not, they continued to win, regardless of how they did it. So Manchester City went into all of these games for the entire last 3 months of the season, knowing we have to win. We have no choice.
But if you look at the what we thought would be the defining games, Leicester gave them a better game than either the game in the Manchester Derby or Spurs. That's the facts of it. And I honestly feel, while it was an unbelievable thing to go and take and win 14 games like that, I never honestly... From that Newcastle defeat, when Liverpool did not capitalise against Leicester and then against West Ham, those two results, in the back of my mind was, City have lost 4 times. You think they're losing the 5th or drawing? I don't see it. I didn't see it.
That was your own self-defence mechanism as a Liverpool fan.
I was hoping against...
That's what that is.
You thought Liverpool were in control of their destiny.
So you had set an expectation. Oh, 14 games ago, yeah, City are going to win every single one.
Sorry.
I mean, come on.
Andrew, when we drew at Goodison Park, that was it for me. I genuinely felt City were going to go on.
Well, it's not just that Manchester City won all those games to end the season. Until Brighton scored that goal to go up 1-0, JJ, they didn't even trail in a game since they had lost to Newcastle.
Right.
They didn't even trail. So
right, so where are you telling me? Where was this?
Liverpool forced them to find a perfection.
Literally Monday.
That's what I'm saying. You're not getting it. Liverpool, because of how great Liverpool were this season, they forced City to go into every game saying, we need to be perfect today. And this team was good enough to answer that call. It was an amazing job by this team.
Mm. I don't quite see it that way. I just view it through a different lens. But it doesn't mean it's not
Your lenses are broken. You need to go to Pearl Vision and you need to get it fixed.
It doesn't mean it's not a brilliant. I just don't look at it like that way. I'm sorry.
No, apology accepted.
Can't see it through your eyes, man.
I just don't get you sometimes.
It doesn't mean they're not fantastic for what they did.
Yeah, I just don't know what it is you know what? Then you're a soothsayer. I give you credit because you set an expectation saying, yeah, City are going to win every single game. What's the big deal? We already know that this is over.
Well, no,
I don't think anyone else felt that way.
I never said what's. I guess I'm looking at it in terms of the race itself and looking at it in terms of that this was the greatest title race we've seen in Premier League history. And I think if consistency is your thing, if two teams duking it out with no turns from about March onwards, that's fine. But I think what happened was the blips for Man City and the slips for Liverpool happened so early in the season that the natural drama was sucked out of it at the end. And what we saw was two teams down the stretch doing what they should be doing and beating the teams they should be beating.
Here was Vincent Kompany on this title for Manchester City.
Back to back, I think it was the hardest and most satisfying Premier League ever. We played against, Liverpool was exceptional this year, and you know, I don't mean to rub it in, it is what it is. They didn't deserve to be a loser today, but it makes me so much more happy. We played against such a good team all season, and when our backs were against the walls, we won at home at the Etihad, and that made a difference today. And then until now, we were able to stay in front. I'm so happy for myself, but for the team and the fans, you know, and wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, the win at the Etihad was big. It was big for City, but again, I'll say United away, Everton away, Leicester at home, West Ham away. That's the tale of why Liverpool ended up second.
97 points.
Yeah, it's
one loss.
So my buddy who's a Man United fan said this must absolutely gall you. And yeah, because you wonder how are you going to come back and even get close to that again, and are City going to keep setting this blistering pace?
If you want to start to move into the Liverpool side of the conversation, that's fine. I think that I don't want to speak for you, but I do think that there's some comfort a Liverpool fan can take in knowing that you forced City to earn it.
Like, yeah,
you never handed this to them. Like, I can tell you with Tottenham, when Leicester won the title, you know, the way they just imploded against Chelsea to give Leicester the title, it just, I don't know, that was kind of the indelible moment of the season for me. Liverpool never had that. You guys were great pretty much throughout. Like, you lost one game all season, 97 points. I don't know. I think that if you're a Liverpool fan today, you kind of, I don't just mean it as a cliche. You do hold your head high after that kind of season. You'll remember this fondly, even if it didn't give you the result you wanted.
It makes you look forward to next season.
Yeah, because they're not going anywhere. Who's leaving this team?
No, and Klopp actually mentioned that when he's speaking to Sky afterwards. John Barnes put it to him that after 13-14, he never felt the team would come back and repeat. Neither did I. Suarez went out the door, then Sterling later, and we hemorrhaged players. But this time, Klopp says, well, none of our big players are going anywhere. We can consolidate. He says he's not bringing in more players. No, he didn't say that. He said he's not bringing in any more big names. That's going to be a record breaker. Probably won't be, but he will try and tweak that. Some people may leave, some may come in. But I feel more confident now of Liverpool's place as the best team or the second best team in English football right now.
And
I never felt that way before. That's what this title running has done for me. I just can't escape that feeling I had in January where we can't we can't afford to draw these games because City are that good now and their wobbles are over.
Now, Liverpool are not the first team to lose just one game in a season and not win a title. In Europe's top five leagues, Liverpool, Real Sociedad of 79-80, and Torino in Serie A in 76-77, they also only lost one game and didn't win a title. Oof. There is one team that did not lose a game for an entire season and did not win a title.
Ooh, go on.
78-79, Serie A, Perugia. They drew 19 of 30 games that year.
All right, well, they didn't
That's incredible.
That is the most...
They didn't lose.
That's the most Italian thing I've ever heard.
Isn't unbelievable,
it?
Yeah.
And that was the era of you have the ball for as long as you want in midfield. We're just going to sit here and wait till you give it up.
Yeah, pretty unbelievable. Yeah, I think you're right to feel good about Liverpool moving forward. I guess the thing that I would wonder about, you say that they're not planning on bringing in any really big names, but I do think if...
Record-breaking, he said.
Okay,
because they were talking about Insigne.
I think Klopp has brought them back to a point now where we went through that kind of wobbly period, like you said, with Suarez into, like, up through Coutinho, where Liverpool didn't necessarily feel like the destination club that maybe they had once been. I feel like they are back to being that once.
Yeah, well, I think we're one of Europe's elite clubs consistently now.
I mean, back-to-back years in a Champions League final.
Yeah, and in the UEFA Cup in 2016 as well. And I feel as if Klopp has brought that about. There's also an atmosphere. Andrew, don't think a player isn't looking at Anfield on a night like Barcelona, looking at that comeback, or as everyone is obliged to say now, that remontada, and think, I want to be a part of that.
Yeah,
any of Europe's top players will want that.
In the last 10 seasons in Europe's top five leagues, Liverpool's 97 points are the most by a runner-up. Real Madrid had 96 in 09-10. Also a year where Real Madrid came up short to Pep Guardiola when he was with Barcelona.
Interesting.
Yeah. Do you have anything else on Liverpool? Is that kind of it? I know we were also... You've really been stuck on the whole title race as a whole.
No, I'm taking this as an artistic thing. Here's Alan Shearer talking on BBC Match of the Day, and I want you to listen to just some of the words he uses, and I want you to react. Okay. You tell me.
It's been an unbelievable season from both City and from Liverpool. Best season we've had in the Premier League since it started back in 1992. What they've given us has been nothing short of pure entertainment, and it's been absolutely relentless. I mean, we said about 7 or 8 weeks ago, just wait till the pressure comes the last couple of weeks of the season. Both teams have shown none of that. Yeah. They've just won week after week after week, and it's just been incredible to watch.
Well, one thing I would disagree with at the end there is when he says, we asked, you know, the pressure's going to come and how will they respond, and they've shown none of it. I don't know if I fully agree with that. It took a 30-yard Vincent Kompany blast to get past Leicester City, and it took a header from Origi off kind of like a shoulder of Lascelles to get past Newcastle. So there, in the waning weeks of the season, there were a couple moments where you could say, oh, maybe these teams are starting to feel the weight of this just a little bit. You want me to take the bait here on him saying that this was the greatest title race? Is that what he said?
No, it's just that he said, you know, what did he say about excitement? I think
you've had this thing for the last several weeks now where you feel this need to downplay what we've been witnessing, and I don't know why you're doing that.
No. I think just from a pure point of view in terms of twists and turns, there haven't been any. What you need is a loss. You need someone to go to, like, a lower team, drop points, then the other team to respond and maybe not do so well. You need that level of excitement.
You are right. There have not been twists and turns.
No, what we've had is two powerhouses surging ahead.
Right.
That's what it's been. And it's just, it doesn't remind me. I think what's happened here is we've had, even including the Leicester one, we've not had a title race since 13-14, like a genuine going to the last day. And I think what's happened is...
How can you call this not a title race?
No. I said this is the first one we've had. And I think that the fact that the Premier League, which lauds itself across the world as being the best league in the world, and often is portrayed, or certainly in the media, as the most exciting, has delivered upon that in the sense that we went to the final day. Andrew, the last few years, when have we gone to the final day?
We haven't.
No. And that's the point. I think this is being sold as an exhilarating title race when it's been a title race. I needed someone to lose a way on the road, and I needed someone to trip up, and it never happened.
But you didn't take any exhilaration in the anticipation of that possibly happening, like Alan Shearer used the right word when he said relentless. And that's really what this was. This
gripping.
Just like, this,
it gripped this, you.
We kept talking about the mental strength of these teams fending off pressure while also competing in other competitions. You know, both went deep in the Champions League. One is still playing. And it was just like, it was relentless. This win after win
just
after
like
win.
If you look at 94, 95, 11, 12 with Man City, 13, 14 with Man City again, there was just, I felt like there was more down the stretch. And like I said before, I think the slips and the bumps in the road that we usually expect came very, very early.
Let's see.
Oh, maybe, you know what? Call me a curmudgeon. Maybe I'm just whatever.
Well, look, I get
it. Doesn't make
you're coming at this from a perspective where you don't want this title race to be memorable because you feel you're on the wrong side of history.
No, I totally understand
that. I get it.
But on the last day, if Liverpool had won, at least that would have been dramatic because City had one hand on the trophy. That would have been dramatic. Now, look, if Liverpool won it, I would be. Be the greatest thing that ever happened to me.
We finally got into the heart of it.
No, but that's because you're breaking 29 years. No, I'm not. No. Well, we weren't in it last season. I still told you, you know, title race, whatever.
Well, I mean, what was the title race last season?
There wasn't one.
Right. Let's see, JJ, a couple other things from the weekend. We got to talk about Manchester United.
Do we?
I mean, what? The most feeble, you know. I was going back. I didn't actually watch that game because it just felt utterly meaningless to me. And boy, did Manchester United treat it as such. But there was one thing that I couldn't help but look at. The second goal that Cardiff scored.
Mm.
So, like, you're Paul Pogba and you're, like, one of the highest paid players in the world.
But never mind that. You're a footballer in a game. Stop with the money.
His willingness, the ease with which he completely quits on a play.
Oh, it was worse than that. It was the equivalent of, I know what I should be doing, so I'll make a little dart. And literally halfway through the little dart.
Nah, I'm good.
Can't be bothered.
Yeah.
Cannot be bothered. The guy runs the ball straight into the box and centers for his teammate. Now, like, that goal is entirely on Paul Pogba.
Now, I don't want to overreact to a singular moment.
Well,
in
Man
a
United
game,
fans, in did game, you see that video?
No, I didn't.
Oh, at the Stretford end. So they're all doing the clap to the Stretford end.
Yeah.
Pogba's there with his shirt off, and this guy is just screaming at him. Like, and it's basically about levels that he's just not putting it in. I mean, you
and
can't lie to the fans. That Andrew, that was so visible.
Yeah. And like I said, I don't want to harp on a singular moment from a game that didn't really matter against an opponent that was, like, whatever. But it was just hard for me to see that and envision him playing for Manchester United next season.
It was jarring. And I got into it on Twitter with a friend of the pod. We've had him on a couple of times, Kristen Hennage, who's a good writer, very good writer. And his point was, United knew all this about Pogba. They knew that he didn't really track back for Juventus. He didn't do X or Y. But, like, at some point, you stop talking about tactics. There's a guy beside you who's got a lane right to the goal. You see him and you're marking him and you stop doing it because you couldn't be bothered. Now, that goes beyond systems. That goes beyond anything else. That's just professionalism.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's season ticket holders there that do not want to see him back at Old Trafford.
Never good. Ole Solskjaer has a couple quotes from this season that really made a lasting impact in my mind. One we talked about earlier heading into the second leg for Manchester United against Barcelona when he said, we have a plan. It's a decent plan. Well, it's a plan at least. Like, after, remember when he said that, I remember thinking, okay, well, they're cooked. But how about this one from Solskjaer? The big plus is that the season is over. End quote.
Well, it wasn't quite the end of the quote. He said, we can look forward now.
All right. Well, yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah, but
that this has been a painful crash landing.
The big plus is that it's over is still not a way to begin a sentence that's going to inspire those around you. Like he qualified it by saying, you know, we can look forward and draw a line under the season. But like that suggests that there isn't major surgery needed, that we just need to get this out of the way. And he went on then to talk about get our fitness right. Like he's obsessed with the fitness of the team, which is like must be the biggest slap in the face to Jose Mourinho that this team is somehow not up to the levels of fitness is incredible.
Ender Herrera out the door.
He had a wonderful video to say goodbye. Did you see it?
No, I didn't.
Oh, he's in his car and it's mood music and flashing in front of him is goals against Yeovil Town and everything he's done. Now look, United fans will tell you he at least put a shift in for them. You know, he worked hard. He was not.
And he was moved around to play all kinds of different positions. I remember him in a back three against Spurs.
He put up 200 plus appearances for them.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
Chelsea 0-0 to end the season with Leicester, so they will finish. They do wind up finishing third, which, boy, there are portions of the season where, like, if you had told me during certain stretches that Chelsea will wind up third, I would have said, really?
Yeah.
You know, I view this season with such a kind of negative cloud over them, but a third place finish for a team that went through as much turmoil as they did with, you know, Alvaro Morata was a total failure.
With
the
European Cup final to come.
Yeah. What a incredible. Like, they can hate Maurizio Sarri. They may not love Sarri ball, but if they want to fire him, is that justified with how this season wound up faring for them? I don't know that it really is. Now, it's going to get difficult for them because today, and we've been saying it for weeks, months, really, that it feels like Eden Hazard already has a foot out the door.
NBCSN tweeted that the deal is done and will be announced after the Europa League final today. That was from their account. So, I mean, I feel like that sounds about right. And also, at 28, he'll turn 29 in January, in the middle of next season. Like, he's got to make the move now. Just pure professional point of view. He's won leagues and played exceptionally well for Chelsea. I don't think he owes the club anything. And it's probably a good time for him to go because he waits another year. It's probably not going to happen.
Yeah. Chris Hughton sacked by Brighton, 4.5 years with the club. They didn't wait very long to do that.
Now
you ask the question if this is fair. Can I respond to that?
That's
really a tricky one in his situation here. More than many other firings that we've seen over the years, with maybe the exception of Ranieri, which was fascinating, that whole conversation when he was with Leicester. I would say this about Hughton. Was he a victim of his own success? Because, you know, I don't know how good Brighton ever really were, but at the end of December, remember they beat Everton, and they were 11 points clear of relegation.
Yeah.
They were actually just 3 points shy of the top half of the table. Brighton, were they ever really that good? Ever? That's a mirage. And I wonder if Hughton, having done that, if he almost tricked people into thinking that Brighton were something that they really weren't. You know, like I said, they beat Everton near the end of the season. They lost just 1-0 to Manchester City in an FA Cup semifinal. He got them to an FA Cup semifinal, a day at Wembley for this club, in a game where Tottenham had to win at the new stadium. They did, but Brighton pushed them right to the limit to do it. They, in a game that Arsenal had to win at the Emirates, Brighton actually got a point against them. There are things you could look at and say, okay, like, was this really fair? But ultimately, here was his problem. From March 30th to April 23rd, they played 7 games. They lost 6, they drew 1, and they did not score a goal. And even in the one draw, which was a 0-0 against Wolves, which is good, I don't believe they even registered a shot on target.
Now, the belief was that the problem that the owner, who has an excellent relationship with Chris Hughton, that the issue was that they had strengthened in terms of attacking players like Jan Gabash, and that still it was on Glenn Murray's shoulders to do the things that needed to be done in front of goal. What Hughton had done was built a brilliant defence with Dunk and Duffy. He'd also got a lot out of Gross last season. He had a huge amount of assists and goals from midfield. That didn't really replicate itself. He suffered from injury this season too, and so they fell away a little bit. Thing was, it's not just about the Brighton game where you simply comes for Chris Hughton. There was Newcastle, brought them back up, got them promoted after relegation, sacked. Norwich got them promoted, kept them up, sacked. And then, well, I know they went down that season that he was sacked, but still sacked as a Premier League manager for Norwich. And then you add on this and you feel as if, has Chris Hughton been treated fairly?
It's a good question. The only thing I could think of is in looking at the way the season kind of ended for them, when it seemed like they were clear of relegation and they dragged themselves back into the fight with how poorly they played and the style in which they played. Maybe it doesn't feel fair right now, but I think Brighton, I think the board is actually making an attempt to be proactive here. Let's not wait for next season to begin and us to get off to some dreadful start, and now we got to throw in a manager who doesn't have his players. I think they want to just rip off that Band-Aid now, bring in a manager who can make his kind of signings during the summer, and really give themselves the best possible chance to start well next season.
My worry is, Andrew, that they wanted more attacking football. They wanted... I guess they probably saw some other teams above them move into it, and, you know, look at Crystal Palace. They probably wanted a bit more like a push towards that mid-table and hold that mid-table ground and not be in a relegation battle. And I do understand that because everyone wants to be in the Premier League now with the money that's going around. But I would say I don't think he had the squad to do that. I really don't. Even with the additions that they made. It leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
Well, he will work again. I feel like he'll kind of be thrust into that. There's this category of manager, like the Alan Pardews, the Mark Hugheses.
I think he's better than those guys.
All right, he might be, but I feel like, you know, these managers who just, you almost forget, like Tony Pulis, like you almost forget where they even are. You know they're managing somewhere, but it's just like they're on that merry-go-round. He'll be somewhere.
I heard Taylor Twellman mention our friend Alan Pardew in terms of the New England Revolution job. I mean, if we had access on a regular basis to House of Pards, that would be amazing.
That would be something. I look forward to that happening, even though I doubt it will. JJ, there's really only one way now for us to end the season.
Okay. Oh, for God's sake.
There's only one way that we can really end the season, and that is with your 2018-19 Premier League trivia.
I'm tired. I don't want to do this. Oh, God.
It's not about want.
It's what you're going to do.
It's what's happening.
All right, go on.
All right, so wrap your mind around it. Here we go. This keeper finished the season with 21 clean sheets, second most in the Premier League era.
Ederson.
Allison is the answer. Allison Becker. Allison Becker. Sounds like the main character of like a coming-of-age teen comedy, like an attractive girl and can't hardly wait. That was Amanda Beckett.
Right.
Allison Becker.
What a season he's had, despite the couple of mistakes.
Let's see. This year we had a three-way tie for the Golden Boot winner with Mane, Salah, and Aubameyang. It's the first three-way tie since 98-99 when these three won it.
Michael Owen.
Yeah.
Alan Shearer.
No.
Michael Owen, Paul Scholes.
No.
Michael Owen, Andy Cole.
No.
Michael Owen, Dwight York.
Yeah.
Michael Owen, Dwight York.
The last one is the tough one.
What club was he at? Tell me.
At the time?
Yeah.
Leeds. That
Jimmy,
may help.
Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. That was a big hint. One of the biggest ever given.
Oh, stop.
Let's see. Tottenham finished the year with 13 losses. That's the most for a top four team since this club.
13 losses. Finished in the top four. Ipswich Town.
Everton in 04-05.
Okay.
Everton. Let's see. A couple more here, JJ. You're doing... This is respectable. Solid. Not amazing, but...
Hey, you sprung it on me.
Well, what are you going to study? I mean, come on.
No, it's all about humiliating me.
There was one player from a non-top six side that finished in the top 10 in both goals and assists this season. Just one. Can you name that player?
James Maddison.
No. Good guess, but no.
Who am I missing out on here? Goals and assists.
He's a striker.
Not Jimenez.
No. Good guess, though.
Oh, go on.
Callum Wilson. Oh. 14 goals, which was ninth, and then 9 assists, which was 8th. There you go. A few more. Vincent Kompany joined an elite list this weekend. He's one of just 3 team captains to win 4 Premier League titles. Can you name the other 2?
Roy Keane.
Yeah.
Frank Lampard.
No, but you're so close.
Oh, John Terry.
Yeah, sorry. There you go. I'll give you full credit.
Lampard wasn't the captain. What
no,
are we talking
John
about?
Terry was. According to Opta, only one player created 100 goal scoring opportunities this season, and he played for a non top six side. Can you name that player?
100 goal scoring opportunities.
Yeah, I think I actually referenced him having a lot of these a few weeks ago. Maybe that was in my own head.
Goal scoring opportunities. And he's not at a top six club.
Not at a top six club, but he's on his way. Maybe not this year, but...
Oh, my God.
Ooh. He's president shares a name with him. An American president. What a hint.
I'm
James Madison.
Oh, I just mentioned Madison. I didn't think you'd... Yeah, okay. Madison.
You didn't think I'd what? What does that mean? How are you turning this on me?
Madison.
Let's see. Last one.
I always think of the separation of church and state.
Last one.
Instead of assists.
Let's talk about dynamic duos, JJ. Frank Lampard assisted on 24 DDA Drogba goals. That's the most in Premier League history. After them, there's a tie for second. McManaman to Fowler and Anderton to Sheringham. Both 20 goals with those duos. Then, in third, with 18 assists for this player's goals, is this duo who reached that number just this past weekend.
Alexander-Arnold to Mane.
No.
No, go on.
It's not just for this season. I think it's in their career together.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
Oh. David Silva, Sergio Aguero. Felt like that one could have gotten.
Oh, that was forever. Oh, right. Yeah, okay, yeah. Not just this season. All right.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible.
Yeah, but it sounds about right. Right? I mean, those two have played together for a long time. They've been great for a long time. I'm almost surprised that they don't have a larger number than that.
How many?
18.
It does seem small, doesn't it? Do you ever look at people's assists after a season and think, I'm sure he was involved in way more than that? And then you think, oh, well, the assist is the final pass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there you go. We can really now close the book on the season. Actually, we really can't because we still have the Devonlings. Our next podcast, whenever that will be our end of season award spectacular. Every year, it's just an unbelievable event.
It's a gala event. Who's hosting this year? Billy Crystal can't do it.
That's usually your go-to.
Oprah won't do it. She doesn't like you.
I respect that.
She kicked you out of the book club.
I'm not a strong reader.
I was thinking maybe we could convince Anderson Cooper to do it. He would just play it straight.
I don't know if I can really envision him hosting some sort of silly award show.
No jokes, no frills.
I would think we're kind of more on the level of like a Tom Green.
Tom Green.
Yeah. Bring him back. That sounds about our level. I'll tell you what, we'll take a very quick break. When we come back, we still have a lot more. We've got a mailbag. We've got a red card man of the match because we actually didn't do red card man of the match last week. I believe it's the first week in history where that hasn't happened.
I wonder why
everything,
that was.
Everything just went out the window. On Wednesday evening. But yeah, still plenty more to do. Don't go anywhere. Back now on Caught Offside. Just a heads up for everybody. You've been great with your 5 stars for 5 years. Podcast reviews are flying in. And I've noticed a lot of people aren't even leaving their memory. We're just kind of getting them to now leave reviews. But as we've said, in honor of our 5-year anniversary, which is kind of like being celebrated now throughout the next couple months, I'd say, we want you to give us a 5-star review on iTunes and in there put a favorite memory of yours from the podcast, and we will go back, we'll dig it up. I'll tell you this, people have been leaving the review that they want this.
EPL, back for more.
So I did go back... God. So I did go back the other day to find it.
To dust it off.
And I'll tell you this, I started listening to it, and it just, honestly, it just elicits this like inner feeling from me where I tense up. It makes me so uncomfortable. I couldn't finish it. I had to stop it because I can't listen to myself do that to myself.
I can't listen to it in full. Like the drop, EPL, back for more. I actually can handle that now. The whole thing is just...
It's so long.
I laugh so hard. Do you ever laugh so hard that you get a pain in your stomach and you start sweating? It's incredible. I can't wait. That's got to be...
So I have that. I did find
Should that be the first one that we do?
Sure. Why not? So everybody be on the lookout because sometime in the next, I guess, week or so, week to 2 weeks, when we start now really loading in at the ends of the podcast with the memories that you guys have been submitting, we'll start with that one, and we'll give the people what they want. Because, like we've said, that was a while ago, and a lot of people who listen to the podcast now have never heard it. They don't even really know what we're talking about right now. I wrote a song, okay, everyone, to start a season to the tune of Billy Joel's We Didn't Start the Fire, to really get everyone excited about the season. And it
You thought I was going to be involved in it.
Well, but you were supposed to be.
But you went ahead and recorded it.
Because I needed to know if the melody fit.
And it just became this thing on its own, and you refused to release it.
Well, I promise, because fortunately for you, you have a podcast partner who is a very willing idiot. So I'm happy to play it and let everyone just have a good old laugh at my expense.
I'm afraid people will crash cars.
I don't know that people really want it.
Set themselves on fire.
I don't know that people truly want to hear it. I think they like saying that they want to hear it, but then when they start listening, they're just going to turn it off.
No, they're not.
Well,
no, they're not. Oh, God.
All right. Well, I'll allow it. Let's see, JJ, you have some farewells that you would like to bestow upon several people.
I have some goodbyes. It turned into a segment all of its own. Diego Godin made his last of his 388 appearances of his nine-year athletic career on Sunday, making this the final time he'll play for Los Rojo Blanco. He was honoured by a capacity crowd who gave him a standing ovation. One of our listeners questioned whether he'd end up in MLS. That's not the place for defenders. Goodbye to football. Not just goodbye to a club. Goodbye to football for Robin van Persie. He received a substitute guard of honour from Feyenoord. Much in the John Terry style. He received it from Feyenoord, the opposition Den Haag, and the match officials in his final game at the Kuip. Which was a little bit weird to see, but kind of nice. And Feyenoord were roundly beaten 2-0. And the final goodbye from this segment is from Tim Way's Instagram post. To all my Celtic fans, I want to say thank you for all the undying support you have given me throughout my time with Celtic. I will be joining my national team to participate in the Under-20 World Cup in Poland. With this decision, the gaffer told me that it is in the best interest of the team that I collect my things and go home rather than be part of the game on Sunday. That was the Old Firm. So I'll be on my way.
Hmm.
That's the one I really want to talk about. Not since a country music song. He told me to pack my things and get on my way.
I'm not familiar with that song
after
at all.
I slept with her sister. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's a very... Like he's thanking the fans in the most effusive way possible.
Doesn't seem thrilled with the manager.
No, and if I'm a Celtic fan, I'm not thrilled with the manager. An accommodation had been come to that he would, you know, go prepare with the US team, then come back for the cup final. And that accommodation, you know, it didn't seem to work out. And so prior to a huge Old Firm derby, that's it. It's over. He doesn't get to play in the Old Firm derby.
Or be a part of
any of it. And I'm sorry, 16 appearances, 4 goals. I thought he'd have more, but he's been used fairly sparingly particularly by Neil Lennon and certainly by Brendan Rodgers too. But he helped win this championship and now he's leaving. I'm hoping he'll get his medal, but he won't be around for the celebrations. Guy's 19. He deserves this. I don't know why Neil Lennon had to boot him out.
Yeah. You're right. It almost feels like there's something we don't know here.
There's a Roddy Forsyth article for The Telegraph. Google Roddy Forsyth, Tim Weah. And it talks about, it has some quotes from Weah about how pumped he was for the Old Firm Derby and how he hoped he'd play and how psyched he was to be part of this team. It's just... I don't know. It seems very capricious.
Yeah. It's an unfortunate ending to what was kind of a fun little loan spell for him. I mean, I remember in the beginning of it, he's coming in as a sub. He's scoring these great goals. Yeah, this is a bit of a disappointing way for that time to have ended.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I feel sad.
Let's see, JJ. You've got a mailbag in just a sec. But before that happens, I want to tell you about ZipRecruiter.
No, tell Brighton about ZipRecruiter.
Well, yeah, I guess they need to know. They certainly need to know. Hiring is challenging, There's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, smart. A place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/offside. That's right. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over hundreds of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And now, listeners to this podcast can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/offside. That's ZipRecruiter.com/offside, OFFSIDE, ZipRecruiter.com/offside. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Mailbag.
CaughtOffsidePod@gmail.com, @COSoccerPod on Twitter, CaughtOffsideESPN on Instagram. Now, I put it out on Instagram to solicit questions for the mailbag, comments for the mailbag. 90% of them were already transfer speculation.
Oh, our favorite.
So I said, no, guys, we got to wait a little while. I can't do, who do you think such and such player will come to such and such a team when, couldn't do it. Matthew Lodice, or Lodice, Kim Basinger?
Sam Allardyce?
Don't know how to say it. Sorry, man. Matt. Dear gents, so after a few minutes of standing behind a gentleman in line at a Chipotle-like lunch place this afternoon, I look up from my phone and towards the counter. Just as I'm looking up to the counter, the gentleman moved his phone to the right into my line of vision. And what do I see? He has the podcast up on his phone.
Oh, amazing.
He also has his earbuds in. I wanted to tap him on the shoulder and talk soccer slash the pod, maybe ask him if he's a JJ or an Andy. But I stopped myself, not wanting to interrupt his lunch zen and or come across as more of a creeper. What is the correct protocol here? A couple of good friendships have started by randomly talking soccer, so I'm always eager to connect with the people over the game. Andrew, what is the protocol?
Always tap them on the shoulder. In fact, I actually go a step further. I assume that anyone with earbuds on the street is listening to Caught Offside. So I would tap anyone on the shoulder that has earbuds on and just say, is that Caught Offside you're listening to?
Get away from me, you
awful
man!
No, that's never, the response is always yes. Why, yes it is. Let's be friends.
Awesome. So always,
yeah, always tap that person on the shoulder.
Right, perfect. Anto, hi guys, listen to ye.
But real quick, you know what the weird thing about this now, though, is the guy who was listening to it obviously listens to our podcast, and he'll now probably know like how many people were listening to Caught Offside while they were in a Chipotle recently. So he'll probably be listening to this episode and think, that was me. So maybe you guys need to, here's what you need to do. The two of you, we're going to start a friendship. I want you both to go back to that Chipotle.
This Chipotle-like.
Oh, it's not a Chipotle, he said?
Chipotle-like. So some kind of,
what does that even mean?
Burrito-based emporium.
Go back to whatever burrito-based emporium you were at this Friday at 6 o'clock, and I want you to stand and wait there.
What are you doing?
And you two will meet, and you will become friends.
Either that, or it's the prelude to an episode of Serial.
Why?
Which talks about the podcast murderer.
Who's killing? What are you? It's
you
two people that like soccer.
Mm.
I think I just created a friendship.
All right. Go to your burrito spot. Anto, hi guys. Listen to ye from Cork. Cork City in Ireland. Mm-hmm. The real capital. Ye would really want to clarify if you're the same as Caught Offside the website. Laughy face. We have said that a lot and we are not. My question is, what steps can Liverpool take to improve going forward? It seems like they couldn't have played any better this year, bar the away game that I went to versus West Ham. First 13, 14 players are as strong as anyone in Europe. What are they lacking? Gomez and Ox are returning and they are surely offloading Sturridge and Marino, which will give some salary room. Thanks. Good question, Anto. I don't know.
They're not lacking anything. Not really.
I think we
center,
need
another center midfielder.
Yeah, I think we need another center midfielder. I do think that. I think we also need to clarify what exactly Shaqiri's status is. Was he missing most of the season, like I suspect, because he has been struggling with a groin injury? will he want to stay? If it's going to be limited minutes, what happens there? And if Sturridge goes, who on earth do we replace him with that's going to want that kind of role? What to do with Origi? I don't know. Those are some questions that I really don't know. And Anto, I have not answered your question, but thank you for listening. Wayne Andrews is asking about last week's dramatic night in Amsterdam. Andrew, how do you feel that Moura was the hero and not Kane?
Fine. Totally fine. I mean, yeah, I guess if you're scripting the movie here, then yeah, Harry Kane is the likely protagonist, but... I don't care.
No,
who cares?
Yeah.
It's in no way affected my, oh, what a moment, but I wish it was Kane. Like, no one did that.
I'm sorry that Vladimir Smicer scored that goal against AC Milan.
Yeah.
He hasn't been consistent enough to get such an honor.
Completely fine with... and by the way, Lucas Moura is...
good.
He is good, and he's... he was EPL Player of the Month for the first month of the season. He scored the goal for Tottenham against Barcelona to get them into the group stage. He did have a hat trick a few weeks back in the league.
Yeah.
So he's not just some random guy. And there's also a little bit of an irony, which you referenced, that he's also this club known for not signing anyone. He's their last signing from January of 18. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm fine with him playing the role of hero on a game like that.
This is a huge question. This guy, Drew, needs guidance. Drew from Louisville. Love the pod and couldn't wait for the post-UCL semi-final matchups one to hear your reactions. It was great. I discovered after the Liverpool match that I have to go to a wedding that happens during the final. Ugh. Should I watch it in silence on my phone from where I'm sitting, or do I go the Andy route? Record, wait until later, and hope, pray that I don't see anything that gives it away. I am travelling for this wedding and won't get to see the recording until the following night. Thanks, guys. Keep doing great stuff in the pod. I give 5 stars on the App Store, and I want to hear Andy's first rap, EPL, Back for More.
First of all, it's not a rap.
EPL, Back for More.
Anyway.
If it were me, you can't go to a wedding. I don't know whose wedding it is, but you can't go to a wedding and sit in the corner and look at your phone.
Why can't you?
Well, all right, you can.
You absolutely can. Nothing happens. Nothing happens in a wedding.
The game is at 3.
What do you think,
Eastern.
The priest is going to pull a rabbit out from behind the altar? Ta-da! There's going to be a light show or something. It's going to be two people reading out terrible vows that they both thought were brilliant.
You do know weddings are parties,
them.
Right? People dance and eat and socialize,
yeah,
and have fun.
And soccer matches are, 90 minutes long. He can get away with
possibly
this.
In this case 120. If longer than that, it might kill me. I will not be able to physically handle penalties.
I watched Spurs and Manchester United at Old Trafford during a wedding. Right in the middle of that wedding. It was the reception, mind you, and the dinner, whatever, but I watched it.
I would strongly consider the DVR method. But this is a tough one because it's a final, and that is a really difficult score to avoid.
I would say don't go to the wedding.
All right. Well, it's good to see that JJ's taking this seriously.
No, I am. Don't go to the wedding. Some things are more important.
What's your next question?
No, what?
You're not taking it seriously. That's not an option. He's already got a plane ticket, he said, right?
Go get diarrhea. Stay in your hotel room. Boom. Father Biff. Here is an American brain question. It's so loud on the pitch, it must be near impossible for managers to get their players exactly where they want them at times. Do players have memorized plays they run? Has anyone ever used sideline touchline play cards such as those used in college football? You know the ones I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Where have lots of symbols.
There's a picture of Pac-Man.
Right. And sure. Just thinking that for set pieces, it would help issue specific directions, especially late in a match when things get frenetic. Honestly, no. Soccer is much more freeform. And set pieces, guys know the drill. On a corner kick, a guy might put up his right hand, drop it down to his left thigh or right knee or something like that to signal. And most guys know the plays they're going to run when a guy sets up in a certain way. Soccer is not a set piece-based game like that, Biff. But I will say this. When Mourinho started out at Chelsea, he did used to give... pieces of paper to substitutes or to players who were coming on, which would be handed to another player with instructions. Mm-hmm. That happened. That still happens, I'm sure. Anit. Hey, JJ and Andrew, listener from West Bengal, India.
Nice.
It was good to hear that intro from both of you being absolutely delirious with joy. That's last week's pod. You guys have come a long way from that Trinidad and Tobago debacle, which was the first time I listened to you. Now, as a Barca fan, it hasn't been easy, you know, getting knocked out 2 years in a row in the same embarrassing manner. But this one has given me a pain I haven't experienced since the 2014 World Cup. This team was better, was well rested and was mentally motivated, so I thought it was to win it all this year. Truth is, this team has the highest wage bill in Europe, hides behind that one man whenever it gets tough. Without him, Barcelona definitely doesn't win anything in these last 2 years. In between my crying sessions over the last couple of days, I want to congratulate you both. Best of luck for the league, JJ. Hope they win it. They didn't. And I will be rooting for old Spursy Andy in the UCL.
Thank you.
I will recover hopefully soon enough and be mentally prepared for another heartbreak in the summer with Argentina. Life of a football fan, eh? Keep up the good work. My funniest moment from the podcast has to be where JJ introduces people to the CONCACAF Champions League song. All right. Oh, my God. We've got a few here. I'm going to have to trim
JJ.
Some.
Is irresponsible.
Is it really? All right. Let me trim some here. Sorry, guys. Let's go for this one. Jesus Zinedas, I know Andrew's answer for this, but JJ, which buzzer beater is better, Kawhi Leonard or Lucas Moura? I say Moura by a million times. Great pod, down with the other soccer podcasts. Moura's for me, because I'm a soccer fan, and the way it was a really good move. It's lumped forward, there's a deft touch by one player, and there's just another deft cam pass and a really cool finish.
Here's why, honestly, removing bias, here's why I do believe the answer is Lucas Moura. What happens if Kawhi Leonard misses that shot? The game goes to overtime. What happens if Lucas Moura misses that goal attempt?
Tottenham.
They lose. I think that adds a little something to it.
Yeah, that's fair. Someone said it hopped on the rim like the...
It was unbelievable.
Like the Virgil van Dijk volley.
Well, let's move on. I don't need to relive this.
No, the Virgil van Dijk volley against Everton. You know the way it hops in Pickford.
Yeah, I remember all of this.
But if Pickford was there, he would have been goaltending, right? That's the rules. If he went to touch that. Oh, no. If it hops up. Here, oh, right.
So, if it hops on the rim and someone smacks it while it's still within the cylinder of the basket, it would have been goaltending.
Oh.
All right. Is that it?
Yep.
All right.
Sorry, I missed a few guys. But we're running over.
Let's see. Let's do this.
Red card.
I'm going to go first, JJ. My red card goes to Xavi. Not the player. Not the player. The British retail company, which is a company I never heard of. But I saw this at prosoccertalk.com, so I'll give Joe Prince Wright and them all the credit. I'm reading now directly from the article. Xavi ran a competition for a trip to Madrid for the Champions League final, complete with flights, hotel accommodations, two tickets to the game, and cash to spend. Amazing. With two Premier League sides reaching the final for the first time ever. That's not true. But that was in the article. Right?
Yeah.
Two Premier League sides. United
Chelsea
and Chelsea.
And United in 2008. First time in 10 years.
An oversight.
Oh,
I'm
good
sorry.
Lord. Joe Prince Wright.
With two Premier League sides reaching the final, there was heightened interest in the competition domestically, with fans of both sides hoping to secure a dream trip to watch their team compete. Unfortunately, a technical error led to every single participant receiving an email indicating that they had won the prize.
Oh my God, it's the worst nightmare.
Every single person believed they had won. Xavi tweeted an apology, which said, "Apologies, we're aware of a problem regarding the recent MasterCard competition. We seem to have had some technical issues, and we're currently looking into this." Then this, "We're extremely sorry to have got our loyal customers' hopes up," a spokesperson for Xavi told the Liverpool Echo. "However, due to human error, a mistake was made with our mail out, and unfortunately, there is only one winner of the tickets." Obviously, I'm sure people didn't actually believe that everyone was going to win. MasterCard, the sponsor of the competition, who were sadly dragged into this in the statement made by Xavi, they said, "We're extremely disappointed with today's events, and our sympathies go to the many people who were wrongly contacted by Xavi in connection to their competition. We have asked Xavi to clarify how they are resolving as a matter of urgency."
What a mess.
I think that MasterCard-Xavi relationship is probably a little bit fraught right now.
By the way, I'll tell you what's fraught. The Europa League final, the airport in Baku, accommodation, tickets.
Well, we have time to get into the conversation about ticket allotments, things like that.
Madrid's going to be a mess as well.
Yeah.
This is all. I mean, Xavi, theirs is a particularly glaring error, but everything surrounding these finals just seems to be horribly mismanaged. my red card. Andrew, can you transport me back to Main Road, Manchester, 1996, please?
Sure. Will this work?
Wait a minute, Doc. Are you telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
All right, let's hop in.
Okay, perfect. You may have noticed misinformation going around Anfield on Saturday. Sudden pockets of fans cheering a goal at Brighton, even before the actual goal at Brighton. Yet because of social media and split screens, we could tell pretty quickly that nobody had scored at Brighton. Well, in 1996, the relegation battle went down to the final day, and Manchester City were playing Liverpool, needing results to go the way of the Blue Moon Rising to stay up. A supporter with a radio in the stands at Main Road relayed the information that relegation rivals Southampton were losing and that all City needed was a draw. So captain Steve Lomas started running the ball into the corner to try and run down the clock until recently substituted Niall Quinn came running down the tunnel to the field to tell City that they needed another goal. Even with this realisation, it was too late for City as the clock did run out and they fell to the relegation trap door. This is them talking about it. Gary Lineker, Des Lynam on Match of the Day.
There was something we noticed in that game where they were playing for time at the end, which was rather difficult to understand.
Yeah, I think it's happened a number of occasions. Here's a free kick. There's 5 minutes to go. The score is 2-2. Now, obviously, there's some duff information reached the field because Lomas gets the ball and keeps it in the corner like you do when you're a goal up and you're just trying to cling on.
You think he thinks the draw's okay?
I think there's a supporter in the crowd that's probably a Coventry fan who shouted, "Don't worry, Leeds are 3-0.
Oh, man.
Oh, God.
Sadly, this is one of those things that's hilarious and can never happen again.
No,
technology has just fixed this.
But, like, this isn't... I'm not going back to the 1980s pre-Premier League. This is the Premier League. This is Liverpool playing Manchester City on the final day of the season. How can a manager blithely, God rest him, Alan Ball, blithely take that information and give it to his captain and say, "You're going to be fine"? Who told you that, guy in the stand?
Clearly not a journalist. Always need a second source. Really a third source. Or more.
By the way, isn't it brilliant that I found a Man City red card this week?
Your bitterness knows no bounds.
I went back in time to get it.
Caught Offside's Man of the Match.
JJ, for my Man of the Match this week, we have a...
It's time for Boy Wonder Why, Christian Pulisic! Oh, that boy really is special!
Is this the day we retire Boy Wonder Watch?
Why? It's not about his team, it's about his age. Are you saying he's too old to be a Boy Wonder?
Well, he's about to move club in a major move.
Right.
And he's saying goodbye to the things of his teenage past.
All right, yeah, if you want to make it a young adult watch, I'm fine with that. JJ, like you're referencing, this was his final home game for Borussia Dortmund, and of course, a flair for the dramatic, he did this.
Back out top for Guerrero, he'll chip in onto the back post, the lady in front, and it's 1-0! Christian Pulisic gives Dortmund the lead in what could be his final home appearance.
And a game of massive importance for Dortmund as well. They did go on to win 3-2. It was kind of a wild stoppage time, and the whole conclusion of the game was kind of nuts, but they did win it.
Fortuna missed a penalty, too.
Yeah.
As bad a penalty as you'll see, guys.
Like Jason Punchin bad?
No, not in terms of power. In terms of elaborate stop-start run-up from an angle.
Like Zaza?
No, not the high knees like Zaza. More the run at the angle, almost like he's had a few drinks. Then stop, start, send the keeper the wrong way, drag your penalty wide.
Those always end well. But yeah, Dortmund did go on to win, and Bayern Munich drew 0-0, which means that the title race will go down to the final week. Munich had a chance to end it.
Now, Munich have Eintracht Frankfurt at home, which is tricky, but Borussia Dortmund, who, if you've seen the mistake, the Borussia goalkeeper, for letting in the equalizer for Fortuna, you would be like, oh boy. They've got to travel to Mönchengladbach, who are in fourth at the moment. Hmm. No, this could be great.
It could be really, yeah, it really could. However, this was a boy wonder watch for Man of the Match, so I'll stay with him for a sec. He was honored before the game by the club, which was really nice. A ceremony of which Pulisic said this afterwards. He said, quote, "Before was honestly the hardest part. They gave me a little ceremony and it hit me when I was walking to the locker room. It was really emotional. My last time. It was not easy." This game gave him two goals in a week during, like we said, a critical time in Dortmund's season. And I think it's nice that it kind of ensures that he'll be remembered fondly by the club where he really came of age. Not to say that he wouldn't have been, but he's going out on a high, which I think will always kind of leave a positive memory in the minds of Dortmund fans.
It looks,
I think that's a nice thing.
It looks so special. That stadium is...
In terms of his best moment with the club, I would probably have to say he was 18 years old, so he's still kind of becoming Pulisic at that point. Second leg, round of 16 in the Champions League against Benfica. It's 1-1 on aggregate. Second half when Pulisic does this.
And that's a good-looking ball for Pulisic, and they've done it! It's the 18-year-old American! He has found the second goal, Christian Pulisic!
Put them through in the Champions League. Christian Pulisic. Aubameyang did go on to add a couple more to make the scoreline look worse than it was, but it was tight, and Pulisic, he was fantastic all game, and he wound up with the winning goal in the Champions League. Man, that was a huge moment for him. It was a good run for him at Borussia Dortmund. Hopefully they've set him on his way now where he can...
He may do something this weekend for them. It may not be at the Westfalenstadion, but this could be big.
Yeah,
he may
certainly could
sign off with a third successive match on the score sheet. Yeah,
but this was his last home game, so I wanted to honor him properly in a dignified manner. And there's no more dignified manner than getting a man of the match on
from this
offside.
Podcast. It's cherished memory.
What do you have?
My men of the match is the championship action, which I enjoyed on Saturday. The championship playoffs are finally poised going into the second leg as Villa and Leeds take one goal leads into those second legs. Villa will go to West Brom, whereas Leeds will go back home to Elland Road. Two fascinating ties, with the derby between Villa and West Brom at Villa Park being the pick of the bunch. The equaliser from Conor Hourihan, an Irishman, was an absolute beauty right in front of the Holt end. And it had a kind of a old school roar that we all love when it hits the net.
Hourihan wants it edge of the box as well. On his left foot.
NYCFC graduate Jack Harrison set up Kamaru Roof for Leeds' only goal versus his former teammate, Frank Lampard, who's manager, of course, of Derby County. Also, Harrison was involved in a penalty incident where Craig Pawson allowed his original decision for a penalty to be overruled by the advice of his linesman.
Oof. Those are always controversial.
Yeah.
And
That was... That caused consternation amongst Derby fans. I don't think it was a penalty, but it takes a lot to go to your linesman and agree with what he's... Well, for him to disagree with you and for you to go with it. So those second legs tomorrow, West Brom versus Aston Villa at the Hawthorns, and then Wednesday at Elland Road, Leeds United and Derby County. One goal separating both these ties.
Good
and
stuff.
There is no away goals.
Yeah, I know.
High stakes indeed, Andrew.
Yeah, that should be fun. That should make for some nice work time viewing. By the way, you mentioned there Derby. So you know how I know
Derby
my American brain may slowly be Europeanizing?
Oh, really?
So there was this thing at the Meadowlands racetrack this past week called the Sportscasters Derby.
Right.
But like this was all going on in the thick of just like soccer madness here, and I just kept seeing it. And I kept telling people, like, oh, do you know about this thing, the Sportscasters Derby? I kept calling it a derby. I feel like I'm going to start saying the Kentucky Derby.
Instead of derby.
Yeah. Wow. I feel like that's the first step.
The next step is if you start deliberately mispronouncing Ipswich in the fashion of Marcelo Bielsa. At his press conference a couple of weeks ago, it was hilarious. He, four times... The interpreter said Ipswich, Ipswich, and then he just gave up.
Chipwich. He just wanted a Chipwich. Mm-hmm. They're fantastic. Who wouldn't? Well, hey, this was fun.
This was fun.
I guess now we got to start mounting our awards for the Devonlings.
Yeah, we have to get onto our supplier because they are platinum.
As they should be.
Can you please try and talk to Billy Crystal's people?
He's not interested, all right?
Hey, if you had to get a presenter...
I told you, Tom Green. Hey, this was fun, my friend. We will be back, of course. Remember to keep leaving your 5 stars for 5 years. Reviews, we really appreciate them. And we'll get those memories cranking out sometime in the next week or so.
With a special first
one. I swear I will do it to you. I say
EPL, back for more.
Have a good one, my friend.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.